captain of Ingolimus. Akivas faces his job in GOG with Keeve and Ellie and Zooey.
Post-show recaps is over, but I'm just getting started joining Allie Lasher and Akiva Whitaker on my favorite podcast, New Girl, Old Guy, that is NGOG. I am neither the new girl or the old guy. Allie and Akiva, how are you?
Well, I'm living La Vida Loca, Dr. Amanda. That was wild.
I don't think I said my name. I'm Dr. Amanda. I'm so happy to be here.
Thrilled to have you here. Kiva, are you even here?
I'm here. I'm living a Kiva Loca.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite t-shirts. Line.
It's like my, I think that's like my fifth favorite t-shirt I have, Akiva.
What's your fifth favorite t-shirt?
I purchased a Living a Kiva Loca shirt.
I don't even have one. I don't have a Living a Kiva Loca.
Well, did you purchase one?
No. That would be quite a scandal if I purchased one and didn't get one.
Do we have the numbers on how that shirt is doing?
Yeah, I have all the numbers. Yeah, that's it's my thing. I'm just the big numbers guy. Rob's always sending me the numbers, and I'm crunching the numbers. And like, well, we sold zero last month, which is a 0% increase from. Like, I didn't even know we sold Living a Kiva Loca. I mean, I'm sure I knew at the time, but I've long since forgotten. So.
I purchased one because you're wearing a Mets hat on it. So I bought a blue one with orange writing. And then I can wear it as Mets merchandise.
See, I love the idea that we had shirts, and I think in general, Rob probably should probably sell more merch. I think people like it, but you can't really buy your own merch because you can't wear it out. It's like an insane move, you know. Even to the gym, I can't wear like a shirt with my name on it.
Two things: one, I own the only NGOG merch in existence that I made and purchased myself and wear. It doesn't have my name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also own and purchase one of three pieces of challenge merch, challenger hat butt merch.
Does it say your name on it?
It says the name of my podcast on it.
Well, it's different. Like, then Living a Kiva Loca with like a picture of me.
The picture, I think the picture stuff, Amanda. I don't know.
I think that you should just stand behind it. Just, you know, just go for it. Wear it with pride. I think sales are going to really boost after this podcast, by the way. You're going to see, when you look at those numbers, Keeve, it's going to be a huge,
if you
huge
own,
quarterly increase. Yeah.
If you own a Living a Kiva Loca shirt, please tweet it at me.
What do you think you have to do to get merch? Because, like, you know, I've been around the block. I had to make my own merch. But maybe fives of people have asked for merch. Fives of people have asked for merch for this show.
I think if you come with the merch idea, you could probably get merch.
I'm wearing the merch idea. I'm wearing it around town. I made it for myself. That's so me. I wanted it, so I made it. I'm Ariana Grande.
And it's only for you.
I got it. I made it. I bought it. Whatever. Yeah. And it's only for me. All right. Well, let's talk about what we're here to talk about because, you know, thank God for you, Amanda, for many reasons. But certainly chief among them are that you are here today to talk about They Came Together, the 2014 film with one of the most stacked casts of all time. And yet here I sit, unable to comprehend what we're going to talk about for the next 20 to 55 minutes.
I'm just so curious to hear what both of your reactions were to this film. It seems like neither of you knew very much going into this.
What gave you that idea?
Akiva, did you know anything about this film going in?
I thought it was a classic romantic comedy before I started. I did not know the premise at all. I thought it was a regular rom-com. And then the movie starts, and I thought, like, okay, it's a regular raunchy rom-com. And then once the guy is, like, hanging, Jason Mantzoukas is hanging out the window, and, like, he ignores him, and then I realize, oh, like, there are no stakes in this movie. Anything can happen, and nothing matters, because it's all just going to be jokes and silly.
And then is that the digest, Keeve, or...
I can give you the digest. Do we do digests on jars?
keep. It's been a millennia since we did a jar. I'm just happy.
Yeah, I don't remember. I could do a digest. Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd are a couple, and they're at dinner with Bill Hader and Ellie Kemper, and they're telling them the story of how they met, and that's the movie, the story of how they met. And we see how they met and what happened to them.
Fantastic.
It's just thrilling to see the digest in action live, to be present for that. Yeah, I take it that that Allie, you texted, I had no idea what this movie was, lol. Like, this was you seemed to have not enjoyed this very much.
Well, so here's the thing. I was like, so yesterday, a little bit of insider baseball, and I don't mean this to be sad. So yesterday was, at the time of recording, yesterday was my dad's birthday. Today is the 9 years since he passed away. I made a dinner I was excited to tell Dr. Amanda about. I was like, I'm going to make a dinner my dad would have liked. I made lamb chops for the first time. Ooh. I made like a crispy shredded Brussels sprout. I made roasted potatoes. I was like, celebrating my dad's birthday, I'm gonna watch a movie. I sit down and I'm like, what the hell is this movie? But I think it's
this movie did not meet the solemnness of your occasion that you were celebrating.
Well, I mean, a couple of my dad's favorite movies are Kick-Ass and what's the movie, oh my god, didn't we talk about it for this podcast, or we were going to? Accepted. So it's not as though this can't have, there's not space in the Bill Asher oeuvre for this, but did I use that correctly? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But film catalog, I think part of the expectation, like, I didn't do my own research. Like Akiva, I thought this was like maybe like a spoofier rom-com or like a funnier, kitschier like rom-com than like a Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey project. But I was not prepared for, like, the Not Another Teen Movie edition of a rom-com. Mm.
Yes, exactly. That's what
now,
it is.
Now, Kiva, Dr. Amanda was, before she joined us, I was like, thank God Amanda's here. I said, say a lot of things about me. I'll always say to your face what I say behind your back. So while Amanda wasn't here, I said the same thing, like, thank God Amanda's here, because I don't know what we're going to talk about. And he was like, I didn't expect you to like this movie. And I immediately got offended. I don't know why. But I was like, save it for the podcast. Why, Akiva, did you think this was not a me film?
Well, first of all, I think this movie's like not for most people, if that makes any sense. It made $82,000 at the box office also. We're not talking about like some major hit. No, I don't think this is your style of humor at all. I didn't like it either. I think I could talk about it because I think there's a lot going on in the movie. I don't think it's boring. But I didn't particularly like it. I didn't think you'd like it. I know you wouldn't have liked it, and you didn't like it, so you can't be offended.
I didn't hate it. Here's the other thing. I talk about this a lot, but, like, I do think watching a movie for a podcast changes the view of it. Like, if I just put this on, because, like, Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, like, would it have been what I wanted it to be or expected? No. But would it have, like, washed over me? Maybe I'm checking Twitter. Maybe I'm watching, oh, that's funny. Like, there were some funny parts. It was awesome to see, like, all of these, the cast, the cameos. Like, it was just absolutely stacked with just every funny person. So it's just hard when you're, like, sitting with a laptop taking notes to have, like, this movie be the subject of that.
Yeah.
But, Amanda, what's your history with this movie? Because you wrote to us and said, you need me.
Yes.
You're right.
Well, I'm the co-host who represents a different opinion here. So I have like a history with this creative team. So this movie is written by Michael Showalter and David Wayne and directed by David Wayne of the State fame from MTV's The State sketch comedy show that was on in the 90s, which is like one of my absolute most favorite things in like the history of the world. When I identify as a fan of something, it's like probably Survivor and The State. And The State is, you know, maybe a little bit even more than Survivor. I've been like that, just that sketch comedy show meant so much to me when I was in high school and watching it for the first time. And I followed the careers of that team like very, very closely. So the tone of this movie and the style of comedy and the types of gags is like something that I very, very much expected, because it's all like very much David Wayne sensibility and in his wheelhouse. I just love this whole crew of actors and writers. And I'm like just, a really big geek about all of this, to the point where like I've seen a number of the members of the State Live. I actually just went to see the State Live in October when they toured for the first time in 15 years. And I like Zach Orff, who plays the waiter in this, in a pretty dumb scene in this movie. Like he, I played pool with him in San Francisco after I saw him perform one. So like this is just a group that I've been following. So I have zero objectivity about how good this is. But other films from this creative group like include Chester's favorite movie, The Ten, is one of the movies that I think that was written by Showalter and Ken Marino. Also Wet Hot American Summer, it's the same creative team behind that, which I think is actually like a vastly superior movie to this, but also shares a lot of that in common in terms of like the actors and the crew. So I mean, I'm just a big geek about all of this humor. Like they've been working on, like Michael Showalter and David Wayne have worked on like doing a rom-com spoof before. Their 2005 film The Baxter is a little bit less funny and a little bit more sincere than this, but shares a lot of those tropes. So like to me, watching this movie is like having inside jokes with old friends. Like I don't know if this is the best execution of what I love about Michael Showalter and David Wayne, but it's like very familiar to me. And I like just cracked up. I thought a number of things in this were hilarious. So that's the history that I bring.
Once again, thank God you're here. And it's funny hearing that history, and I've heard you talk about your love for the State on your Party Down podcast, fantastic Party Down podcast, featuring Ken Marino.
Basketball friend. Yeah, swish.
Big complaint here, not enough Ken Marino in this movie.
Never enough.
But like almost none at all. And I like... And that little history makes a lot of sense, because I do like Wet Hot American Summer, which is probably, would you say that's like the most, well, I was going to say commercially successful, but more like cult classic, like
it's
wider.
It's so funny. Like I think if you look at the Wet Hot American Summer Rotten Tomatoes, so the Rotten Tomatoes on They Came Together, and Kiwi, you called this out when this got picked from the jar. It's a 71% from the critical reviews and a 40% audience score. I think that like Wet Hot American Summer is kind of is sort of the opposite. Let me look at what Wet Hot American Summer is. Yeah, that's 38% in the tomato meter and 75% with the audience score. So sort of like the reversed, where the critics hated it and the audience loved it. Like it's really funny. The most commercially successful thing that David Wayne has ever done is Role Models. That was his commercial hit. But I've heard these guys interviewed so many times, and it's like funny, like the interviewer will often, like in a very friendly way, say like, you guys have such a great cult following, like do you try to make really niche stuff that appeals to like a very specific group of people? And they say like, no. Like every time we write something, we're trying to make a commercial hit. Like we just can't do it. So
that's also what people ask us about NGOG. Mm-hmm. Are you guys trying to appeal to just a niche audience who's okay with your inconsistency?
No, we're trying. This is us trying our best to be the biggest podcast on the internet. This is just how it came out.
Now, what's funny is to connect it to our namesake, David Wayne directed an episode of New Girl. Did we talk about that? I mean, this is all the way back in season one. He directed season one, episode 19. Secrets, which feels like we really should have had a Dar appearance on that episode.
Big blown chance there. Maybe when we go, we've never joked about like going through New Girl again when we finish, but if we did that, we'd have to have me on that again.
Somebody asked me recently, like, are you going to keep it doing anything after NGOG? And I just went, no! Like, it was the most offended I've ever been to be asked a question. Just kidding. We're obviously going to be doing New Goldberg's Old Guy, as has been previously discussed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's the best way to approach this? I have a complaint as a resident of New York City.
New York City was a character.
It's Allie. A character in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I wanted to say before I get to my very relevant, important New York City complaint.
Allie from the editing room, against my better judgment at 12:34 a.m., I am jumping in here to say that I never get to my New York City complaint. There's just too much to cover. It's that he lives on 86th and Broadway, and there's like a meet cute, they missed each other moment on the subway station at 79th, and he's coming up from the downtown subway station. So is Paul Rudd taking the subway one stop, getting out at 79th? I'm just so sorry for interrupting the podcast with this. Back to the show.
I think what I was worried while watching this movie, I Googled, like, okay, there's obviously like a ton of clear, overt references to rom-coms.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the rom-coms that I think of as rom-coms are slightly after the rom-coms being referenced by this movie, other than You've Got Mail and When Harry Met Sally, which I am painfully familiar with, painfully in the best way, familiar with. I Googled, like, okay, what are all of the references in They Came Together? And, like, a lot of the movies I haven't seen and I'm not, like, well enough versed in to be getting the references. And I don't think it's required, but I think it would have made me enjoy it more because, like, when I did get the You've Got Mail and the When Harry Met Sally, I, like, chuckled and was more in on the joke than outside of the joke.
Right. Yeah, I mean, these guys are, like, you know, a good 20 years older than you, Allie, I think. So it's, like, not going to be your, like, genre of rom-coms. Like, I agree. I think You've Got Mail and When Harry Met Sally are, like, two of the big ones, like, obviously the, like, you know, the like Ma and Pa, like, shop being taken over by a big corporation is, like, very is that You've Got Mail? No, that's Sleepless in Seattle, right?
No, that's You've Got Mail.
Oh, that's You've
based
Got
on
Mail.
The shop around the corner,
right?
Ripped off from the ripped off from the ripped off.
Yeah, there's, like, I mean, there's, yeah, there's, like, the Graduate, Wedding Singer, like, almost not broken up marriage thing. Like, there's a lot of, like, very, very direct tropes. There's, like, they say, like, I'll have what she's having, you know, the Harry Met Sally line. So I feel like you kind of notice what they're doing, even if you don't know exactly what it's referencing. But their basis of references is probably, like, going to be 15, 20 years older than, like, what you're most familiar with.
Here's a question I have coming out of the film. So Vulture left an article, as Jared Jerome would say, has an article about the references, and it's much of what you just said. But there's a bit here where Molly, played by Amy Poehler, introduces Joel, played by Paul Rudd, to her parents, and they are overt white supremacists. And I was shocked to see this scene as a reference on Vulture's list, that this is much like Fools Rush In. I've never seen Fools Rush In, starring the late Matthew Perry. Have either of you guys seen that?
I have not seen that either.
Kiwi?
No, here's the thing.
Because I'm like, if there's a real rom-com where there's, like, Nazi parents, maybe I do need to watch that
it
movie
really
and see
took
how that
me,
works.
Honestly, that took me out. Here's the thing. I do you know if any of this was all scripted versus improv? Because there's a couple times in the movie where it's inconsistent. Like, Amy Poehler says she doesn't watch TV, and then, like, 20 minutes later asks him his favorite television show. So I do wonder if, do they do any improv or no? They're like, it's a pretty hard script.
I don't think that they do, like, a ton of improv. I'm not saying that there wasn't any improv, but they also definitely did not care about a consistent plot line, like, having a consistent through line.
Because we're supposed to root for these characters, but they'll throw away everything we know about one of our main characters for any joke. So,
but are we supposed to root for them? Like, that's not clear.
We're at least, we have to, like, they're not supposed to be Nazis. you know?
Yeah, no, and I'll say, like, I do feel like this was 2014, and I don't think that you would have, like, had this scene, even, like, post-Charlottesville or, like, whatever. Like, this felt like this was, like, they were being way too comfortable with this being, like, a safe thing to make a joke about.
But it's not even played for jokes. It's just like, oh, they're both Nazis. And then,
well,
like, nothing
funny
happens.
That's why we need to see the source material. We need to see Fool's Russian.
I think that Fool's Russian is more like, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Like, I know that that's, like, a culture clash, like, romance. So you're right. I do think that going back to the source material might be. I thought they were going to do more of, like, a meet the parents thing when they showed up at Molly's parents' house.
Like, I have nipples, Greg. Can you milk me?
Right, right. As opposed to going with the Nazi thing. Yeah, but I think if, like, I think that, I guess that what I would say is the biggest, like, weakness of this as a movie is that it does, like, is exactly what Akiva says. It doesn't give you enough of, like, a make these characters enough of, like, consistent, real human beings. They're a little bit more like joke machines or, like, cliche machine. Like, they just kind of, in every scene, they're just going for a gag or going for, like, hitting this cliched note that, like, it doesn't work enough as we're watching these characters through a whole movie and we care whether they get together or whether they don't. And they kind of, like, make some self-referential jokes about how things don't line up, like, with the Bill Hader, Ellie Kemper, like, dinner scene. She'll be like, wait, but why did we care about that? Or, like, was this because it reminded you that life is short? And then and Paul Rudd will be like, yeah, let's just go with that. Or, like, this doesn't really make sense that she would marry this guy that she's not in love with, but let's just call it one of those weird ones. Like, they kind of gloss over that and make that a part of a joke, which I get what they're doing, but I think it probably would be a more watchable and successful movie if David, like, Wayne tried to do more mainstream things, like create a likable character.
If it was grounded in reality, like, I just think if you're going for a big joke, like, God bless, but just going for, like, a joke a second, every second for the whole movie and, like, completely disregarding the thing you just said, it's like, all right, then what am I watching here? This is like an all-star game. You know, in the NBA all-star game this year, a team scored like 211 points, and people are like, well, this wasn't even basketball. I think the same thing about this movie. It's like, you're just going for so many jokes. Nobody's playing any defense, you know? Everyone's just trying to hit a three on every play.
Right.
I mean, now I'm defending the movie because, like, yes, and this is probably an insult to the state, but, like, it is an hour and a half long, like, SNL sketch, like, or whatever the state is doing. Like, it's like, it's just a sketch. It's not like there's any depth to these characters.
Right.
Like, they're caricatures of the characters you would care about or you're asking to care about. Maybe that would be interesting if there was one, like, straight man. If like, so Max Greenfield, the reason why we're here, plays this brother, this, like, ne'er-do-well brother mooching off of Paul Rudd. Although we don't really see that. It's just, like, Paul Rudd is just, like, so mad at him, and then you kind of find out because he's, like, making bacon boots. Maybe if he was, like, confused why he was trapped in, like, a fake rom-com or something, there could be some defense, as you're saying, Akiva, but, like, I don't know, like, I kind of, the most successful thing of the movie to me was the end, so I don't want to, like, jump there, but, like, I think all of that pays off at the end with, like, the ultimate spoof, which is they're not even together. It didn't work out. It's the
but then they are a minute later because they, like, it's you're zigging and you're zagging in the same sentence. Like, they do sort of end
up together. Because nothing matters. It's a rom-com. It's all fake. Maybe
well,
I love
it's
this
not
movie.
A rom-com. Like, in a rom-com, there are stakes. Here it's not. It's like a, like you said, it's an hour and a half SNL sketch.
But exactly. There are no stakes in a rom-com. And that's the messaging. No, I don't know.
Maybe that's the messaging. I mean, like, I think that the part of it where I'm bringing a lot of my own history and generosity about these creators is that, like, from watching them, like, evolve from being, like, these 20-somethings who make sketch comedy through all of these projects, like, I get that there's a part of that they delight in, like let's just pretend, like, let's just have a really dramatic boardroom scene where, like, all of a sudden the ball, like, they love these, like, genre moments and, like, recreating them, and it's almost like kids being like, let's pretend we're in a movie and there's a scene like this. And that's not, like, a very, like, mature, sophisticated point of view to, like, attack filmmaking, but I do feel like there's something that, like, I get wrapped up in, like, the fun that they have with, like, okay, let's just go back to these touchstones that you see over and over again in films and, like, have a good time with this kind of scene and, like, point out that, like, okay, well, it actually doesn't make sense that this would work out for him at his job, like, just because he's our protagonist. And, like, they're kind of making goofs left and right on these things. But it does, it works. It's like the type of joke telling that works really well in a sketch. And, like, your mileage may vary with how it works in a movie.
That makes a lot of sense. I think, like, Curb this season is trading on that a lot. Like, some people in the PPPG, pretty good chat, are complaining about how old everybody is. And I'm like, it's part of, like, the meta of enjoying the show is that, you know, like, Richard Lewis and Larry David are lifelong best friends. And, like, okay, so Richard Lewis, rest in peace now, is, like, not as spry or young-looking as maybe he was 10 seasons ago. But, like, I'm enjoying that, like, the background of their relationship informing the scene the characters are having. Or, like, you know, Rob, I think, mentioned that when we did Wild Hogs, Akiva, like, Grown Ups is more of that, which is, like, four buddies, like, showing up and, like, yeah, let's do a movie. Great. Adam Sandler will, like, get us money for this, but, like, we're friends, so it's fun.
Yeah. The one thing I saw at the beginning of this movie is, like, oh, this is going to be a stacked cast. The cast is ridiculous. But I do think partially because you can have, you know, someone come in and they have an inconsequential character ultimately and they're only in four scenes, it was probably easier. But for a movie that had a small budget, they must have called in a lot of favors, DAR, because, like, there's no way all these people were making their regular rate. This is a small movie, but unbelievable cast.
Yeah, I mean, like, they just have, like, a lot of friends who they like goofing around with. I mean, like, you can see, like, there's people that they've worked with, like, on, you know, there's, like, you know, Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler from Wet Hot American Summer. Paul Rudd was at the state show that I saw, and I think I texted Allie, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm, like, 2 feet from Paul Rudd. And my husband was like, do you know what 2 feet is? But I was very – but, I mean, they have friends, and, like, it's clear that, like, they have this sort of vibe where it's, like, everybody just shows up and goofs around and has a lot of fun. And I think, like, the extent to which that gets – communicated on the screen is, like, a large part of whatever would make this successful to the extent that it's successful to you is, like, people just like getting to do these, like, ridiculous scenes and show up for, like, 45 minutes and, like, goof around, and that's, like, a big part of the fun of it.
What were some of your favorite scenes? I don't know, Kiva, if you have any, but maybe Amanda will lead us.
I definitely had a few. Like, it's so funny, Allie, you'll say that, like, we can never be on podcasts together because I only talk about smart things. But then, like, this is really where I live with this dumb, dumb, dumb humor. The one part that, like, takes me out is when Paul Rudd is pacing outside of her shop, like, practicing his apologies. And he says that he was all hamburgies and hot doggies. For some reason, like, that kind of nonsense, I think, is really, really funny. I loved, like, the Nora Jones video in the middle of the episode where we have John Stamos and Adam
Scott.
They're
breaking, like, the fifth and sixth wall in this movie. They're just breaking every wall. Like, they have this movie soundtrack playing during the movie, like, pretty openly. It's funny.
I did like the reference to you find out that the bitchy girl, Paul's bitchy ex-girlfriend played by Colby Smulders, I can never pronounce anything. Her full name is Tiffany Amber Thigpen.
Oh, Tiffany Amber Thigpen.
Which really sent me that. I got a straight up LOL out of that. Pointless reveal, but it was a great reference. Oh.
I love the dumb gag that, like, every time one of the basketball friends, like, makes a shot, it's, like, a complete brick and they say swish. And I love David Wayne's cameo when she asks Ed Helms, like, why his wife left him. And he's like, you'll have to ask my brother. And then it, like, turns out his brother is there and just, like, tells him that she wanted to travel more and focus on her journalism career. Yeah, I just love, I had a bunch of highlights. I was cracking up.
And I think those, like that, the basketball scene with the swish, that worked for me the most, again, because I think I understood the, I don't know why I feel like I have to understand what is otherwise like pointless references, but I enjoyed the movie the most when I was in on the joke. So like the basketball scene where you have like Kenan Thompson is there, mm-hmm. Ken Marino is there, Kenneth from 30 Rock is yeah. there, and they're playing like, they're just openly saying, you, the amalgamation of all of us, like Kenan Thompson is the guy who like stayed married, is pro-marriage, and then you have like chronically single, smart, chronically single guy, you have like the smart guy, and then the successfully married guy, and Paul Rudd is the amalgamation of them, and if he just uses a little bit of all of us, he'll be fine. And like that is in every rom-com, basketball mm-hmm. included. I mean, that's in Keeping the Faith, like that's in everything. So, and Jason Mantzoukas, sorry to forget him. But like those parts I really did enjoy. Like I did laugh, I did get the joke, and I was fine that it wasn't like building to anything bigger than the spoof of the rom-com. When he starts to have sex with his grandma, that's where it lost
me. Yeah. That's probably a controversial
and honestly, thing. That's another, like, it's a mistake the movie made. He goes to Amy Poehler's parents' house, and the mom immediately hits on him. And then the same thing happens. Like, the grandma thing was so shocking, even though I don't agree with the choice. It would have been, but it would have been less top of mind and more shocking.
Let the record reflect. Kevin does not agree with the choice.
I didn't mean the character's choice. I meant
I know what you meant, but
the film.
Such a funny, like a serious, smart person way to address what is, for people who didn't watch this fine movie, a scene where Paul Rudd goes to his Bubby's house because he's, quote, vaguely but not overtly Jewish, just Jewish enough. And I feel like I recognize that grandma. Is she played Magda in Sex and the City?
Oh, it could be. I recognized her too. Good call.
But I didn't look it up. But like, they share an embrace that then leads to sexual energy that then leads to a young woman's ass being revealed. And then he walks away and she's like begging him to have sex with her. Like, horrible. Like, who thinks that's funny? Like, I don't know. Like, I just. Not to judge the audience, but yeah, that was. I don't like, agree with the choice. Sorry.
That's definitely like one of those shock comedy moments of like sort of pushing, you know, like they're trying to do a raunchy comedy moment that's going to be shocking. I'll say like they've played with this kind of like funny movie trope of like two characters like having this like seemingly innocuous like physical like touch and then have this like what are and then have it immediately escalate into this romantic moment with like the what are we doing here, like that's a joke gag that they've been doing in their work like going way back, and they've just tried to like put that moment in more and more ridiculous situations. So I feel like this is like a little bit of a culmination of like taking the worst moment to turn into an like a rise in sexual tension and what are we doing here type of thing. So I feel like I saw where that idea was coming a little bit more, having seen so much of their other work.
It is something that always bothers me in these movies. Like, is it not another teen movie where like the old woman makes out with someone and there's like the huge like spit between them? There was a movie like that where exactly what I described happens, and it was like played as like the preview for that movie all summer long, like commercial, and that kind of stuff always like skeeves me when you add the incest point, like not to be all high and mighty about it, but like yeah, I didn't agree with the choice. I'm glad Akiva said it so eloquently,
but they step on the joke because the mom does it and then the grandma does it, and if we hadn't seen the mom do it, at least it would be like funny and shocking. Not to mention I'm watching this movie on the train home, and there's like a lot of people, and it's, you know, we talked about this with, I think this was on I talked about this with Rob, where you see like the BN and you're like, all right, there's gonna be like a butt, I just have to like you know, if I'm watching this on the train, yeah. Like, but here it said nudity, so I'm like, oh, where's the nudity? Like, I did like, this is a rom-com, they almost never have, you know, naked people.
It was definitely brief nudity.
Yeah, but I guess Amazon doesn't say brief. Amazon just says nudity. So it was like, it was, you know, a body double of the grandma or whatever. But the
how do you know? You've seen Magda's butt? It is Magda, I confirmed. Lynn Cohen.
Yeah. But I wasn't expecting it, so I didn't have like my phone sort of like pointing down like I did in the shower scene or whatever. And because it's like a weird thing to watch on the train. And then I have to like do this awkward like look behind me like who saw that? Because it's a creepy thing to, you know, like anyway.
You should have stood up and said, I don't agree with the choice.
I disagree with this choice.
I disavow the choice. Here's the thing about the mom scene. So, like, again, because I'm sure people aren't clamoring necessarily to watch this movie with us. Not because of the movie, because of us. The mom is, first of all, it's not his mom, which I think is important, right? Like, the incest piece is gone. Mm-hmm. And second of all, the mom, like, hits on him. And then everyone jumps out when he rejects her and is like, you passed the test. I can't tell you how many boyfriends of hers I've had to watch.
Yeah, you're the first boyfriend who passed, yeah.
And that was almost funny because, one, like, the idea that the test is the mom actually does have sex with her boyfriends. And, two, he then is like, wait, can we try it again? Like, and he's, like, seriously now begging the mom to have sex with him. I didn't love that part, but I thought it was funny in a way that is totally separate and apart from the grandma gag.
Yeah, they're just trying more with the grandma gag. I agree. I think that part was funny. It's just weird to do the same joke twice, like a grosser version of the same joke.
They're different jokes. I think they're different jokes. But yes, those both, like, I think that the other moment that, like, I don't know, there's a few moments where I feel like if you don't like this movie, you really don't like this part.
Yeah, what about when the bartender says the same story part, nine or 10 times? That was driving me crazy.
See, that didn't affect. That was like very who's on first. It's like they do like a who's on first bit. But again, like, I think maybe I only didn't like this movie because we were doing a podcast about it. Because, like, when that happened, I was like, all right, I've gotten the gist of that. Now I can just kind of let it wash over me.
Right, right. And it's, yeah, it's like the bartender just, like, they just repeat the same thing over and over again. You can say that again, and, like, you're telling me, and he says the same thing over and over again. And it's just, like, one of those jokes where you're, like, they're not going to keep on doing it, right? But they do keep on doing it, and they, like, push it just too far. So whether it comes back around to be funny, I think, is, like, going to be a very individual taste kind of thing.
The part where I would have said, if you don't like this movie, don't like this part, just speaking for myself, is when he breaks up with Tiffany and she reveals that she's actually Judge Judy and tears away
mask. Yeah, I really didn't like it
and
either.
Again,
nothing is real. There's no stakes. This whole movie's fake and bogus, you know, at that point.
Dr. Amanda is so sent by that scene that even hearing a complaint about it sent her through the roof.
No, I mean, it's just like, yes, you're totally right to say, like, all of these criticisms, but it's like, that's exactly the kind of movie that they set out to make. It's a joke where, like, it's a movie where nothing is real, there's no stakes, and, like, everything is, like, fully ridiculous.
So are we, like, retconning that it was actually, he walks in on, and that's also stupid, he walks in and they're, like, in the room being very loud and he doesn't notice them for, like, 20 seconds. In hindsight, was that Michael Ian Black and Judge Judy?
I guess so. That was okay. That was Judge
maybe
Judy.
That's why they had like the end like warning beforehand. Like, it's just gonna be Judge
or
Judy.
Maybe only Tiffany only comes to get back together with him as Judge Judy. Like, maybe the real Tiffany is with Michael Ian Black, and Judge Judy is now running a scam to get that sweet.
That's
sweet
what
cup
the movie
Joel.
Is. It's like her, Judge Judy, and Tiffany merging, coming together to get back together with them.
Michael Ian Black's highlights in this
yeah,
are
very
so upsetting.
Funny. It's yeah, yeah, it's like, how can we make him as loathsome as possible? Yeah. And they do.
And like, just the bowl of unwrapped condoms just in the workplace.
Maybe I loved this movie. I mean, I wouldn't want to watch it again, but I would talk about it with you guys again, which is more than I could say for Wild Hogs.
So I think the best parts of the movie for me were when you sort of see Bill Hader and Ellie Kemper react to the stories that they're telling. I do really like that. I think that part actually works.
Are you a big Bill Hader guy?
I do like Bill Hader a lot, yeah. And I thought that part works because it's like they're serving as the audience and like, wow, that's insane. And we're like learning more about both their stories through there. I think it was a good mechanism for the movie. It does ground the movie a little bit in like those are the scenes that actually matter. Everything else
that's,
is like
plastic. That's the closest thing to having like the straight man that the audience can relate to. And I do like they do also have some like pretty silly, ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, when they get up to leave, and Amy Poehler's like, sit the F down, right?
Here's a question, just thinking of Bill Hader, for both of you. Mm-hmm. Who's the most famous person in this movie in 2024
okay.
times?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Adam Scott also has a cameo mm-hmm. in this movie.
He's... Are we excluding Judge Judy?
Is Judge Judy more famous than Bill Hader?
No one's
recently,
ever
not to
before.
Keep talking about Pretty Good, but they recently really undersold Judge Judy's fame in their bracket they did in advance of Curb. But
wow.
Boy.
Most famous, I'm going to say Amy Poehler won.
You think more than Paul Rudd?
I'm going to say Poehler, Rudd, Stamos.
Because there's two schools. I almost asked you it in two different questions, which is really who's more famous between Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler, because I do think they're one and two. And then who's the most famous? I feel like almost every other character is a cameo. I mean, there's
yeah,
more.
I know it's close. Like, Hader, there's a lot of people who are close. First of all, honestly, The Office is so popular that Ed Helms is probably more recognizable by face than any of these people, but his name may be less from, like, the casual Office fans.
Or The Hangover. Yeah, I think he's a recognizable face, but I think some people, before Ted Lasso, I think some people couldn't tell the difference between him and Sudeikis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ranking these people would be interesting in terms of fame, because there's a lot of people on similar levels. Okay.
Bill Hader is up there. Yeah, Kiva, you do this. I think you're the authority.
Well, I think, first of all, there's really a lot of people who, like, are, I'd say, like, not A-listers, but, like, very famous. Like, even Kobe Smulders is a major person in How I Met Your Mother, right? And Maloney is what, SVU?
Yeah.
So all these people have, like, huge history. Paul Rudd is the biggest, like, star of anybody here. And Hader, like, I like Hader, but that show, even though I watch it, was, like, not that big. I'm going to say Poehler, Rudd, Helms, Hader. Taking out Judge Judy.
Really?
I think you're way too high on Helms, low on Thompson.
And Adam Scott has
got
to be
above Thompson
Ed
has
Helms.
To be.
And
Keenan Thompson has to be in
there,
Adam Scott. These people are all, like, on a similar tier. Some, you know, someone's more famous than others, but these are all, like, you know, A-minus list celebrities.
What about, I feel like you're very high on Ed Helms, because I feel like Jack McBrayer, well, 30 Rock isn't as big as The Office, of course, but, like,
no, not,
you're right,
it's
Christopher Maloney would not be in my top five, but in terms of, like, America is probably.
But his name isn't,
five.
Like, people recognize his face, but, like, is Christopher Maloney a huge name? If, put it this way, if we were, like, hosting, if we're like, the three Golden Globes producers, right, and we need a presenter for tomorrow night, someone dropped out, who of these people are we calling? Or, like, we're booking the Jimmy Fallon show, right? We're booking the Tonight
Adam
show.
Scott, Ellie Kemper, Keenan Thompson, Paul, Amy.
But that's what I'm saying. These people are pretty interchangeable. Like, you could make a case for any of them over any of the other. Bill Hader would be great. Judge Judy would be great. Like, all these people. Mantzoukas, even. Even Mantzoukas. Like, they're all pretty similar. Michael Ian Black kicking himself at home that he hasn't been mentioned yet, but he's you know, a level below them. I don't know.
Michael, if you're listening, we're huge fans.
Huge fans.
I'm a big fan of his, but I think, like, Jack McBrayer and Randall Park and Max Greenfield, maybe. Well, maybe he's with Max Greenfield.
No, I think all those people are ahead of him.
You watch.
No, I think that Michael Ian Black and Ken Marino, like, are definitely, like, in a, and you know, David Wayne, to the extent that we would say that he's in the movie, are definitely in a lower tier than the network sitcom folks. Yeah. Even Randall Park is you know, in the mix here. It's a really stacked cast. And
even in small roles, you see, like, there's a lot of big people.
Yeah, the two people who I was looking up there, the two people who are her, like, who also run to court Amy Poehler at the end are Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Michael mm-hmm. Shannon, who are also, like, you know, names who show up.
Michael Shannon
up.
Gets murdered, who gets killed by the cops.
You know, it's interesting that one thing to say about this movie, again, I might love this movie, is like throughout the whole movie, she's saying she was just dumped by Frank, the love of her life, Frank, and she's got a kid that is never really referenced and just introduced to Paul Rudd, starts calling him daddy, which is very funny. And you don't really understand the origin of the kid. And in the last, you know, 10 minutes of the movie, both the ex-boyfriend, Frank, and the father of the kid, Spike, who has just left prison. I mean, it seems like he was released, but it also seems like he has escaped prison, come back. And I was like, you know what? For a movie where it seems like nothing's going to pay off, they did pay off both of those references the whole movie.
Yeah. Did you like when they drive to, like, the fake Boston?
Yeah, well, that does a call into question that Paul Rudd is really the perfect rom-com guy, because the gag is, like, she tells him, if I'm ever debating whether I should marry someone, I'll be at the Brooklyn Promenade. But first she says, do you know where I'll be? And he goes, Boston? It's like, no, that's where I'll be, Paul Rudd. Me, Ali Lasher, will be in Boston.
Maybe he was looking for you. How do you guys feel like our boy Max Greenfield did in his performance?
I thought there would be a little more Max G in this movie. Honestly, he was basically the biggest straight man in the movie, right? He doesn't have an insane character like anybody else. So it is funny that, like, if we were explaining what we're doing, oh, we watched the movie for him. He is the most grounded character, but he's also not like a big enough character to like ground the rest of the movie. But he actually has like a real arc, and it's like the scenes he's in are basically a real movie.
I liked him dressed for the Halloween party as the Biebs from 2014. It was very of the time.
Like, I like they both dress as Benjamin Franklin, but don't acknowledge it the entire time. It never comes up. That's actually a funny bit.
Mm-hmm. I like the way Max Greenfield delivers greenbacks. You sold the tire squeeze swing for a couple of greenbacks.
Yeah, I think he does enough with what he has, which is very little. I think we knew this, that he wasn't that big, that he was, like, very low build in this, which was otherwise a big stat cast. But, like, in terms of his film projects, we were looking at another similar old woman vibe with My Name is Doris as the other option. I don't think anybody's begging for me and Akiva to talk about Hello, My Name is Doris. Shout out to Sally Fields. And then I'm trying to think of what else. I'm looking at his filmography here on Wikipedia. We like Promising Young Woman. I don't know that we were going to watch that. So
I think you picked the perfect film.
My Ice Age Collision Course, Voice of Roger. I don't know.
Promising Young Woman was like hot in the streets when it was out, and I feel like nobody's discussed it since it came out, basically.
I don't know that we need to be those voices.
I don't think we are. No, I agree. But I'm saying it is funny because it was very much in the discourse. And then, like, I haven't even heard the name of that movie in a few years, you know?
You want to know something funny? I just thought of it because as I went to find out where They Came Together was streaming, and I'm like, I have, without exaggeration, every streaming service available to me. Major
what
flex.
What a flex. Yeah. What a flex.
Yeah. And this was
she's
on
our
Peacock.
To-be queen.
Well, so I only have Peacock via someone else, and they have commercials. And I was like, I cannot watch this movie with commercials. So other than that, it was like I had to pay for it. And I just have a complaint that, like, every movie I have to watch for podcasting, including Wild Hogs, Ride the Eagle, which I think only I watched, Akiva, for this podcast, is all I buy on YouTube. So I went and looked. I was like, what are the movies I bought on YouTube? And the only one that I've purchased, a couple of them, but I did purchase Promising Young Woman to rent. That's on funny. YouTube and watched it. What are the odds?
I've been Amazon Priming these because they're almost all on Prime to rent. They're about $4 each. It was, money spent.
I'm trying to think what else. I did like the end that you find out they were getting divorced just through a series of bullet points of like, well, the store was gone. Oh, that's the gag that I really liked. You're hearing this whole time he's got this real dream of quitting his job at the candy sweet explosion factory and research. And he's going to open a Cup of Jewel, a coffee place. And when he does quit to go open that store, it's just a cardboard sign tacked on to Molly's store with just like one coffee maker.
With like with like the gas station drip coffee and styrofoam cups.
And the Coffee Mate product placement or not, I was just like, that's hilarious. That I loved. And so the store goes away. Cup of Joel crashed and burned after only a week. Her son was traumatized by seeing Spike get murdered, as Akiva mentioned. Mm-hmm. And Molly started a pill addiction and then sleeping with her ex-boyfriend Frank, and they decided to just be friends. I that was the most successful run of the movie for me.
No, but then they sort of go back
to the rom-com.
They go back to like trying to make it work. Both couples and the movie sort of on an upbeat note, trying to make it work.
Well, he faces to camera. He gyms it from the office with the like, I told you it was going to be a crazy day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
It was a crazy day for us, too.
Akiva, are you the lowest on this movie, actually, now that we've talked it through?
I think so. If I was rating this on IMDb, and I do rate every movie I've seen since like 1999 on IMDb, plus I went back and did all the old ones ever, I'm usually a pretty like high grader for mediocre movies. I think I would lean 5 over 6 here, 5 out of 10, which is very low for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting, because first of all, Kivo, you say you went back and you did all the old ones. You mean you went back to like every movie you could think of that you've seen?
Correct. In college, I did that on IMDb. Yeah.
Wow, what a crazy guy.
Well, I wasn't, you know, yeah.
And you're famous. See, I don't believe. I think you had to rewatch it and rate it fresh, because like, I also disagree.
I know it's a weird thing, but I sort of went with my best guess for anything from my childhood.
So will it be available, our jar movies, when we get to the last jar movie, that you'll be able to tell us your definitive ranking
of all the jar movies? Yeah.
Sure, yes. We could rank the jar movies next year.
So I think you and I have had this discussion at the end of Jars Past, and I like would think of it more as like, is it above average or below average? And I would think it, like, I'd probably put it at a 4, but I liked it more than you. Like, if 5, I know no one thinks of a 50% as average. They think of that as, like, failing. But if 5 is the true middle, I would say it's just below the true middle. Because I walked away thinking I didn't like that movie versus, like, I'm completely neutral on it. But I don't think we have the same rating system.
We might have a different rating system.
So what's the lowest you've ever scored a movie? Have you ever given a 1?
I'd have to go, let me go look on IMDb. I'm sure I have given a 1.
All right, Dar, bring the average up while Akiva crunches those numbers.
Yeah, what's your review?
Oh, I mean, I think I would give this movie a 7. Like, I wouldn't rate this as a rom-com. I would like rate this as just an absurd comedy, and I feel like this is the kind of movie that like I could mindlessly turn on and laugh at any time. Like, I don't think it's the best that this creative team has to offer, but I think it's like very much in the vein of what I like about what they do. So I would give this a 7.
All right, I found the movies that I have rated 1 on IMDb.
Whoa.
The Animal with Rob Schneider, which we watched.
I was
going
to say, can you give us hints and have us guess? The
Sorry.
Animal with Rob Schneider. Now, this is begging for a spot on the wheel of like Kiwi's ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Now,
one
we have
singular
watched that
sensation.
Already. The Island of Dr. Moreau. I hated that. That's with Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer. And I must have remembered how much I hated it because I rated it in college, but it came out in 96. I see I rated that 8 years later. And then Telling You, I don't remember this movie. The synopsis here says, 2 college graduates who find themselves stuck behind the counter of a pizza parlor while their friends move on, struggle to find a new direction for their lives. And it was with Jennifer Love Hewitt is the only name I recognize. Very small.
And that's
movie.
It?
Those are the ones. And then, hey, listen, because I someone spent a lot of time making the movies. The 2s are Howard the Duck, Speed 2 Cruise Control, which we watched, and I think that's too harsh. Cats, the movie Cats from 2019. Spice World, the Jerry Springer movie Ringmaster. Brad Pitt in 7 Years in Tibet. Now, I shouldn't have watched that when I was, you know, however old I was. Like, I never should have seen that. That's not for, like, 12-year-old boys. And Scary Movie 2, which, you know, has a little bit of this movie in it.
So it's funny because I'm much more limiting in my movie selection. Like, there's just genres of movies I don't watch.
No, so do I. Yeah, nowadays I rarely give below a 6 because I already know coming in. It's self-selecting. I know coming in I'm going to like the movie almost always.
But the movies I remember thinking, I've got to get out of here and this is horrible. Birdman, number one, least favorite movie of all time.
Wow.
What's Kiwi rating Birdman?
I'd have to check, but I mean that's a serious take.
I don't think it is. I think it's extremely polarizing. Am I making
okay?
That
I gave it a 7, which isn't that high. It's
where
below its
on
average
Birdman,
on IMDb,
Dar?
Which is a 7.7.
Did I watch this movie? This is
Emma Stone, Michael Keaton.
Oh, I did see this. I think I remember nothing about it, except I do think I
me
liked
too.
It. And I think my husband
no, I didn't
loved
like
it.
I remember nothing about it, but I know I didn't like it.
A
I
7
think I
like, for
yeah.
a movie you didn't like is crazy, Akiva.
Well, it's well made.
The whole ratings, throw the ratings out the window. All right. And then The 5-Year Engagement, one of my least favorite rom-coms. I believe I left in the last, like, 5 minutes.
I never saw
and
it.
I never leave. I never leave. I did not leave Birdman. And then also the Muppets movie with Tina Fey, not my favorite.
Hmm. It's a Polar and Fey.
Everyone's asking.
I did not see the 5-Year Engagement.
It actually takes place in Ann Arbor. He works at a very famous deli called Zingerman's.
Oh.
And the exterior of one of my law school professor's houses was used in the movie, but not the interior, just the exterior. And yeah, just a lot of nothing happens. I don't love slice of life. I don't love when nothing happens until the end. It's in the name. It's the 5-year engagement, you know? All right, but maybe, Kiva, we should, when NGOG is over, we'll give our most hated movies another chance.
Will do. That would be fun.
All right. Amanda, thank you for reviving what could have been a very disastrous podcast.
Yeah, if this was just the two of us, we would have been like, what the hell is this? And the podcast would have been 12 minutes, I think.
You guys would have found something. You would have shared lots of stories. Allie would have ordered food. Maybe you can't.
We were very on topic. We were very on topic.
I got my lamb chops. I got lamb chops burning a hole in my fridge.
So these are the leftovers that you made yesterday?
Yeah, I always make. If I'm making a big meal, I got to make enough for me for 2 days.
How did they turn out?
I could never do that. Because I would do that and then I would eat them all the first night. I would have like a midnight snack.
Well, this is coming from a man who eats discarded crusts.
It's true. Don't hate.
No, I'm just saying the truth. So here's the thing. What we would have done, Dr. Amanda, is all of Kiwi's homework from last week, which he has now decided to punt till next week.
Punt.
So next week.
Call me.
You're welcome.
Pat McAfee, because I'm punting.
We will do boyfriend rankings updates if Akiva has any, but I've already submitted mine. And we will do updated character ratings from season 5. But Kiwi, you have to. I sent yours to you.
Yes.
In fairness, 1 second before we started recording. You have to do it before you're tempted to watch season 6, episode 1.
Yes, I will do it before I watch the next episode. Good idea.
All right. So we will. I can't imagine, because I don't necessarily know. So, Dr. Amanda, I would like to invite you as well to guess the season 6, episode 1 plot based on just the episode title, if you're up for it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would love to take a hand at that.
Okay.
Dr. Amanda, have you ever seen New Girl? Remind me.
Yeah, I mean,
she's been on the podcast.
I was on
Akiva.
The podcast before.
But I don't remember how much of I don't remember how big of a fan she is.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan, and I haven't watched like most of it since probably very closely after it aired. So there's lots of things I don't remember.
Same. At this point. So I'll give you a minute to noodle on it while I handle the plug. Season 6, episode 1, House Hunt. Akiva and I never discussed that I was on a Renap episode. So not only did Rob and Akiva not plug it, but I didn't plug it either here with Akiva. But
you were one of the titular wild hogs.
Yeah,
I was
Allie
a substitute hog.
One of the wild hogs with Chappelle. Very fun.
It's the only thing I've ever manifested. But this week, you could check out the most... I almost said the most listening, interested. most interesting mm-hmm. listener bracket.
That's a lot like the David Wayne movies where they're like, you want to have a coffee, a cup with me? Like, they kept messing it up.
Coffee, a cup. And then is this when Alex on 32 Fans will present his expertise based on AI generated, random
yes.
generated?
Yeah, topics? Last week I did, we randomly selected a team. I did a deep dive into the 1997 Los Angeles Lakers. Little history lesson on 32 Fans. Alex, we went back to the randomizer, and Alex will do a baseball team this week on 32 Fans.
And are we've there got way the, more baseball games than basketball games, or is it about the same in a season?
Basketball games or teams?
Games.
There's 162 baseball games and 82 basketball games.
So it seems like a lot more work to cover.
Well, we don't do every game. You're doing
if
the
you're
highlights.
Alex?
Okay. That's true. Yeah, maybe it'll be 5 hours. That's a good point. I didn't think
good
about that.
Good luck to Alex. You got more?
Well, yeah, we also have the Oscars this week. Every year for the last like 8 or so years, Av has come on and ranked every movie saw that year. And we rank our movies. I've got my top 10 of 2023 ready to go.
Ask that seems like a group of Birdman fans, if I had to put money on it.
No, because Alex only sees the movies that are like in our top 10s just to like make a conversation. Yeah, Av generally likes, you know, like prestige films. And I watch them too. But I didn't like Birdman particularly that much.
Yes, 7 out of 10. Here's something before we get to Amanda. We got a rating from Calberta. Thank you very much. Or C. Alberta. I don't know. Appreciate you. I have heard Akiva mention NGOG on Renap, but never knew what it was. So, Akiva, if you could tighten up your plug a little bit.
Yeah.
And let the people know what we're doing here. And
fair
that
enough.
Would be
I never thought about that.
I think I do the same thing in fairness on the challenge. And then, Dr. Amanda, you're keeping busy as we wind down PSR this month. I feel like Akiva's asked me for advice on something you asked him for, so I know there's stuff going on.
Yeah, we're still keeping it going, partying through March. Ariel and I are still every week recapping another episode of 6 Feet Under. We are dedicated to making it through season 2, and then we'll see what happens beyond that. And then there's going to be a few very, very fun post-show recaps, end of an era podcasts that we have in store. You know, Grace is going to be with Mike Bloom ranking episodes of television since 2014. We're going to be doing best of lists. We're going to be revisiting some of our favorite podcasts and some of our favorite shows. So stay subscribed to Post Show Recaps through March to hear all of that fun and also hear from me as well as all of the other podcasts what, if anything, might be coming up next. And you can always keep up with me on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R.
Excellent. And follow Keeve at Keeve26. Don't follow me. I won't accept your request. But we're wrapping up the challenge on the challenge wrap ups, covering the reunions parts 1 and 2, the reunion parts 1 and 2.
How long is your break until the next season?
It will be back All-Stars 4 April 10th. It's about a month and a half. To really drill down and focus on New Girl, Keeve.
All right.
And then we'll do several episodes. We got a few special things in the hopper over at the challenge world. So a teaser for that. We'll be doing something interesting for All-Stars. Otherwise, guys, who won the movie? Do we do that? No, I don't think we ever do.
No,
who won the jar? Not with this one. Season 6, episode 1, House Hunt. What are your predictions? How are we going to start off the season?
You asking D.A.R.?
Asking whoever wants to offer first.
I didn't do this last episode.
Nope. We always do it after the draw.
So Cece and Schmidt are married now, right? So they are mm-hmm. looking for a house that they will move into and live in.
Keevy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely my guess also.
Okay, but what about this? We also were left off where Nick is spending 3 months in New Orleans. Is Reagan coming back? Regular season cast, whatever. And are they looking for a house?
No, I don't.
Is it a duplex? I don't know.
Oh, maybe they're leaving the loft and all moving to like a bigger house so everyone could fit there. It's possible.
Wow. Could be the end of an era, but it will be the start of our last full-size season.
Yep.
of New Girl Old Guy. Amanda, I just tried to wrap up and I forgot you're the host. So if you want to wrap up.
Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us for this very special episode of NGOG, talking about They Came Together. We'll be back next week. And by we, I mean not me, but Ali and Akiva, talking about episode 1 of season 6 of New Girl Old Guy. Till then, see ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
See ya, I won't be ya!
Ali and Akiva, gonna talk a TV show, and maybe Jenny Garner, so don't go any farther now. Akiva and Ali, all the way to the finale. His face is his job, she's the captain of NGOG.